Marriage Today presents Indestructible Communication by Jimmy Evans.
I want to talk about the six reasons why we communicate. Now, it's one of those things, when I talk about sex in one of the next sessions, I'm going to talk about the seven reasons we have sex. And a lot of people think there's seven. I think there's more than that. I'm being conservative. But why do we communicate? You know, when you talk about communication, well, why do we talk? And I think this is pretty telling. Here are the six reasons why we communicate. Number one is basic information. I'm just, you know, dinner is ready. Johnny put Tiffany in the dryer. Basic information. I'm just telling you what you need to know. It's just basic information. And by the way, every one of these is a step up from the one before, okay? So at the very base level, if we're not doing anything else, I'm just sharing basic information. Number two is partnership. I need you to go by the store on your way home. I need you, if you would, to take Johnny to the football game or the soccer game. I need you to partner with me. And so I'm going to communicate with you because I can't do all this, and I need to tell you how I need you to help me in this. Number three is conflict resolution. I need to share with you. I need to complain to you. There's a problem here, and we need to talk this thing out because it's not going to go away unless we talk it out. Number four, and this is a huge one, it's connection. It's connection. I'm trying to connect with you. Now, I want you to listen to me. There are verbal and nonverbal ways that we try to connect. Now, this is so interesting. Research has proven that in the average meal together, we try to connect over 100 times. It's constant in our relationship, whether you realize it or not. It's the way we look at each other. It's the way we touch each other. It's the way we talk to each other. And divorce rates go up dramatically for spouses that won't let their spouse connect. I'm trying to make eye contact. I'm trying to talk to you. I'm trying to get your attention. You won't let me. I keep coming at you. It's very rejecting when you won't let your spouse connect. But if you do, it's one of the most powerful things that you do. So I'm talking, but listen, beyond what I'm saying, hey, is anybody at home? Do you care? Are we still married? I mean, heart to heart. Is it about us? Has it become about bills? Has it become about the mortgage? Has it become about the kids? Or is this about us? I'm trying to connect. Number five is personal information and revelation. I want to tell you something about me. I want to share with you a feeling, a thought, a dream, a frustration. Maybe not a frustration I have with you, but a frustration that I have at work, or, you know, something that hurt me that somebody said or somebody did. I want to draw the drapes, and I want to tell you something about myself. And I want to say it again. Every one of these is a step up now. The basic information is down here. The partnering is down here. It's important. The conflict resolution, it's all going up. But now we're at the place of personal information. This is the Holy of Holies. Number six is intimate communication, is expressions of love, affirmation, dreams, desires, spiritual intimacy, sexual intimacy. And again, this is the mountaintop, is we need to be able to share, you know, terms of endearment, you know, expressing our love and our feelings toward each other. But here's what we have to understand. Whenever there's a problem on any level, communication shuts down and almost always goes back to level one. In other words, it's like this. So there's six reasons why we're communicating, okay? Well, if you will not let me connect with you, if I'm trying to connect with you and you won't get off the telephone, you keep looking at your emails, you keep texting, You're busy. You're busy with the kids. There's always busy. There's always something going on, and I'm trying to connect with you. I'm not gonna share with you personal information about myself. The intimacy in communication, everything's gonna shut down, and we're gonna go down to level one, level two, maybe. If I'm frustrated, if I'm hurt, and I'm trying to complain, and you won't let me complain so that we can resolve this conflict, you shut down on me, and you won't host what I'm trying to say. Again, it's going to shut down all of our communication, especially at the higher levels of what we're trying to do. And so communication on every level is critical in our marriage, because marriage is everything. It's not like at work. At work, you may be able to communicate with a person on one or two levels, and you're great. with your friends. You may be able to communicate with your friends on one or two or three levels, and you're great. But on marriage, you have to have all six levels for the communication to be what it needs to be in your marriage. So let me talk now about the five elements of indestructible communication in marriage. And you say, well, how is it, what is it that gives us the ability to get to the level six and to communicate the way that we need to communicate? These are, I believe, the ways. This is the secret. Number one is the right tone. The tone of what you're saying is everything in communication. So I'm going to say the same thing in three different ways. Okay, I'm going to say exactly the same thing, but I'm going to say it three ways. Here's what I'm going to say. Okay, I understand. I'll do it. Okay, I understand. I'll do it. So here's my first way I'm going to say it. Okay, I understand. I'll do it. Here's the second way I'm going to say it. Okay, I understand. I'll do it. Here's the third way. Okay, understand. I'll do that. You can say exactly the same thing, but your spouse is hearing an attitude behind it. The tone of what we say is everything in communication. So we have to watch our tone. Tone communicates care, number one. Listen, if you don't care, it's game, set, and match. It is impossible to communicate at the higher levels with a person who doesn't care. And tone tells you if I care or not. If I care, I say, okay, I understand, I'll do it. And what I'm trying to say is, honey, I care. You know, you're trying to tell me something here? Listen, I care. You can see it on my face. You can hear it in the tone of my voice. Care is everything. Listen, I married you because I love you and I care about you. And even if I don't feel that way, it matters to me because you feel that way. Karen used to say this to me. She would say, I wish I could record the way you talk and hear you and play it back for you to listen to. And you would realize the way you raise your voice and the way you talk to me. And she would say that to me and I would say, well, that's stupid. I don't do that. Just like that. And I mean, I really thought to myself, I don't do that. And I look back on that and think, it's exactly, I was only upsetting her. My response is, your tone is either going to upset her or comfort her. Let me say this now. Women, they know where you are. And they know when you're not there. If you're checked out, if you're at work, if you're off doing something else, if you're checked out, you can be sitting right next to them physically. They know where you are. And when they ask you, where are you? And they're trying to connect, and your tone is one of frustration and anger, and all your tone is sending signals of insecurity to her. It's everything. To a man, and this I said this earlier, our biggest need is honor. And everything that a woman says to a man has to be encrypted with, you're a good man, and I believe in you. And I'm trusting God, you know, but I know you'll do the right thing. It's honey. But whenever there's a tone of disrespect, it's just a tone. And again, you may be saying something that's right. You may be saying something that's true, but you just don't understand how sensitive a man is in his ego. Just a tone of disrespect, it's wounding. It's frustrating. And so, even though we want to acknowledge what you're saying, and we need to, regardless, you have to understand that when your tone is disrespectful, it makes it so much harder for your husband to receive what you're saying. And so the number one thing that is going to make you successful in communication is your tone. I want to say something, just a minute. Don't ever justify the wrong tone. Don't ever justify it. And make a decision that says this: regardless of how my friends talk to their husbands, regardless of what I see in movies or on the television about men treating their wives or talking to their wives, regardless of the way my father talked to my mother or what I think is funny or any of those kind of things, I will never justify a wrong tone, because it will always be counterproductive, and it will. Even if I'm saying something really serious that matters a lot, and I'm trying to get through to you. I will not sacrifice the spirit of the communication because God simply won't honor it. And basically, it's faith in God. I was talking to Karen one time, and she complained to me about the way I was talking to her. And I just thought, well, it's just, you know, I just don't agree. And I'm Mr. Wonderful, and everything I say is true, and you would just do yourself a big favor to listen, you know. And that's when she told me, I wish I could record you and you could hear yourself back. And I just thought, well, that's just dumb. That's just really dumb. And I was having a quiet time one morning, and in a second of time this happened. And I'm having my quiet time. I'm reading Ephesians 5 where it says, Jesus washes his bride in the washing of water with the word. And I saw two scenes instantly that changed the way I talked to Karen forever. The first scene was Jesus with me washing his bride, that's us, in the washing of water with the word. And what I saw was Jesus gently taking his hands in a bowl of water and taking it over my head and washing me just like this with water. I've been saved for 38 years and he's still washing me. When you got saved, let me say, he knew you were not a short project. And he's good with that. Do you know that? Aren't you glad Jesus is so patient? And I just saw myself being washed by Jesus, and I thought, he's just so patient. He's been dealing with me for 38 years, and I still have issues. But thank God he's so patient. The next scene I saw was me washing Karen down with a fire hose. And she was just all blown back, you know, and I had this fire hose on like this. And what I realized is Jesus was patient with me, and Jesus thought, well, you know, it'll take Jimmy a while to get cleaned up, and I'm just going to apply the truth and let it have its effect, and just it'll work. But what I realized was this with Karen. I wasn't patient, and I didn't have any faith in God. Is I wanted to get her fixed. I was frustrated. And it was like every conversation was like, are you going to get it this time? Because I hope you get it this time. Because I'm tired of saying the same thing over and over and over. So my tone was frustrated, angry, and that's what made her feel insecure. So it was that same day or the next day or whatever, I walked into the kitchen and I had something I wanted to say to her and I was frustrated. But I decided I'm not going to be my typical self and I'm going to say it kindly once and leave it with God. Okay. So I walked in and I said, hey, Karen, blah, 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 and love you. Just want to say this. It's all, and walk out. Because I just kept gnawing on stuff, you know, and grinding on it. And I would say to Karen, did you hear what I said? Yeah. Or I said, did you really hear what I said? You know, just dog her until she, because I kept thinking, she's got to get it. Okay, so I said something to her kindly, walked out of the room, and so that day or the next day or something, she came up to me and she said, well, I noticed the way you've been talking to me. And I really appreciate it. And I said, yeah, okay, well, I want to do that. And she said, I really appreciate it. That's what I've been telling you about. Faith in God means this. If I'm speaking the truth, he's on my side, and I don't have to dog you to get it done. If he's not on my side, I'm not telling the truth, and I don't want what I say to work because I'm wrong. One way or the other, I'm going to say it gently and go on, and I'm going to watch the tone of my mouth. Tone is the first thing we have to watch to communicate. Number two is enough time. You have to have enough time to communicate. It's essential. You just can't microwave relationships and conversations. So let me talk about three types of communication in marriage, and I want to be very specific about the time involved. And the number one type of communication is proactive communication time. Okay. And this is something that we didn't do at all when we got married. And I talk about, I'm not going to talk a lot about vision retreats because I talk about it in my seminars. It is a transforming thing if you've never done it. But proactive communication time means talking before you fight. Agreeing so that you don't have disagreements in your relationship. And let me quantify this and say 3 to 5 days a year. You need to dedicate on your calendar 3 to 5 days a year where you proactively communicate. Karen and I just finished another vision retreat. After 38 years of marriage, we still do vision retreats. It's a critical part of our relationship. And where we always start is where we have tension. And we would talk about finances, children, grandchildren, aging parents, That's a big, we have three parents in their 80s right now. That's a big part of our lives. Our schedules, ministry, every area of our lives. And we would just be talking and walking and praying, and we would just say, what do we believe God's saying about that? Whatever. And so at the end of that week, I remember we were walking and we were talking, and I said to Karen, is there anything else we need to talk about? Pray about it. No? In other words, every area of our relationship, we sat patiently. What we do in our vision retreats is in the mornings we wake up and we pray by ourselves, then we get together and we talk and pray together, and then we have fun the rest of the day. But by the time we leave, we have discussed every area of our relationship. But the first time, and we agree, we have God's vision on every area of our relationship, everything. But the first time we did a vision retreat about 20, 25 years ago, our children, because our children were, they're in their 30s now, but they were at home. That was one of the greatest stresses. We had three stresses in our marriage before we did our first, and I did marriage seminars. We had a good marriage. Our children, money, and my schedule. And those were the three things that caused the greatest conflict. And we had a good marriage. We didn't fight all the time, but those were three issues that caused conflict. And we had a three-day marriage, a vision retreat for the first time. When it was over, if we had this good of a marriage before we went into it, we had this kind of marriage when we came out, and we didn't fight. We just didn't fight. We had no tension or friction in our relationship. You're either going to be proactive or reactive. And when you're not communicating proactively, you'll react all year long. You're reacting to money. You're reacting to the kids. You're reacting about sex. You're reacting about housework. You're just reacting. Why? Because you never sit down and agree. The Bible says, can two walk together unless they first agree? The answer is no. It demands a no response. Unless you first sit down and agree, how are you going to walk together? Where are you going? How fast are you going to go? Who are you going to go with? I mean, you've never even agreed. And so I am saying to you, you need enough time to do this. Now, it's not a financial issue. If you can't afford to go away to, Karen and I have stayed in some really crummy hotels and stuff. We would borrow people's lake houses. We would go places that were free, go camping for 3 or 5 days, borrow somebody's trailer, you know, pull behind your truck. Do anything you can at the budget you have without children, by yourselves. You take 3 to 5 days a year and you do a vision retreat, and you don't come away until you've talked about everything. Now listen, let me ask you this question, and I think I know the answer. What would you rather have? 40 hours of difficult conversation that leads to a resolve and peace, or 40 weeks of fighting about the same issue? And it won't take you 40 hours, I can just tell you that right now. Which would you rather have? Would you rather have 40 days of proactive communication or 40 years of a mediocre marriage? Think about it. And I'm telling you right now, proactive communication, sitting down and agreeing about important issues. Don't fight about your money and fight about kids and fight about that stuff all year long. Sit down and have a vision retreat. Make it every year, inviolable. We're taking this time, and that is our time, to do a vision retreat, whether you do it all at once or you do it a couple times a year on weekends or something like that. Here's the second type of communication. It's personal communication. And again, I want to give you a time frame for this. It's 30 to 60 minutes a day. This is every day. Every day you need to be talking. And it's just talking. You're talking about the kids. You're talking about your day. You're talking about your feelings or those kinds of things. And people existed before television. It's hard to imagine, isn't it? Turn the computer off. Turn your telephone off. Jesus didn't have a cell phone. Can you imagine how much he did for the world without a cell phone? I'm going to say something to you. Technology is an intrusion into our private lives. It's a wonderful servant. It's a demonic master. And it's mastering people. And you see people literally with their phone like this, and they're sitting eating dinner, what like that, and it's like, yeah, how was your day? Excuse me, just a minute. And the other person's sitting there, it's like, hey, I'm with you. Have you ever been in a store and you're at a counter trying to do business and they keep answering the telephone, doing business with somebody on the telephone? And you're saying, deal with humans before you deal with people on the telephone? Warm bodies before the phone? Like that, it's frustrating. It's like trying to be with your spouse and you're on the phone or the computer. You can deal with a little bit of that. Put the stinking thing down. Turn it off. There's a time for that. But when your relationship is too sacred to give up for a telephone or a computer or a movie or a television or anything like that, you've got to get rid of those distractions. Now, again, we both talk on the telephone, we text, we email, we do all those things. It has a place and a time, but not our time and not our place. There's a sacred time that we spend communicating every single day, and at least 30 to 60 minutes a day. If you can't do it, I'm telling you something's wrong. Here's the third communication type. It's intimate communication time. This is intimate. This is something that we're going to physically show affection. We're going to verbally show affection. We're going to whisper sweet nothings in each other's ear. We're going to goo-goo on each other. We're going to tell each other how much we love each other for 5 to 10 minutes a day. 5 to 10 minutes a day. Transform your relationship. Is just stop. Karen will be walking by, and I'll just grab her. Just pull her. And just hold her. And she'll do the same thing to me. And say, I love you. And terms of endearment, without sex and without fun, marriage is a business relationship, and it's the worst business relationship on earth. If you're not sharing affection, if you're not enjoying the relationship, what is it about? Just going through the motions and paying bills and raising kids and all that. Don't let your marriage become like that. Is show affection. 5 to 10 minutes, just say every day, how much affection have I shown my spouse? Let me say, one of the most important things we do for our spouse is build their self-esteem. It's one of the most important things that we do. When your spouse cannot get your attention, when your spouse does not get affection from you, and men need affection just as much as women, whether they realize it or not, you need to walk up to your spouse and hug them and talk to them and use terms of endearment with them, laying in bed in the morning, laying in bed at night, walking through the house, sitting in the house, wherever it might be, for 5 to 10 minutes a day. These are time. So, you know, everything I said right there, you can do it in an hour a day, 30 minutes to an hour a day, and take three to five days a year. There's this old saying that if the devil can't get in front of you and stop you, he gets behind you and pushes you too fast. And that's what I see in our society today. People going 100 miles an hour and losing everything that's important to them. And there comes a point in time that less is more. I just have too much happening in my life. Here are some of the overcoming the challenges. Train your children to respect your relationship. Train your children, just like I just said. Don't let your children intrude on your lives all the time. Some people say, we've got 3 or 4 kids at home. We don't have time for that kind of stuff. Well, you're not training your children properly. You put your children to bed at night and you teach them. Say, listen, you had your time. We gave you 3 or 4 good hours to take care of you and put you to bed. Now you stay in that bed. Don't get up. We'll get you stuff to read. Don't watch television. Don't talk. You sit there in that bed and read. And we're going to be over here. And mom and dad, this is our time. And you're going to do 2 very important things for them. Number one is you're going to protect your relationship from constant intrusion. And the second thing you're going to do is model a good marriage to them. But if your children are controlling your marriage, it's not healthy for them or for you. Change your priorities. If you don't have time with each other, your priorities are wrong. You need to give something up. You need to give up a friend. You need to come home early from work. You need to give up a sport, something like that. You cannot afford not to communicate. Eliminate distractions. Plan it. And just plan times to sit down and talk. Plan these times out. And it's such good. Just make it a discipline. It's just something that's going to happen. We're not going to leave this thing to luck or fate. We're going to talk every day. We're going to have a vision retreat every year. We're going to put it on our calendar. So time, here's number 3, is an atmosphere of trust. You have to build an atmosphere of trust. I'm going to go through this very quickly, not because it's not important, but because I want to get to the fourth point here in just a minute. You have to give your spouse the right to complain in marriage. Your marriage, your spouse will not build trust for you unless they know they can complain and keep their dignity. Controllers will make you pay a price for saying the way you feel. That's control. In other words, I will teach you to fear me, and I don't want to hear the wrong things. I only want you to say things on this frequency, and if you say something I don't like, you're going to pay a price for it every time. That's when you lose the trust in the relationship. And this is the way I was. I was dominant, and I was verbally abusive. And I would begin to lash out at Karen and teach her, you're not going to win the argument. You know, I can talk better than you can talk, and I can last longer than you can last. You're not going to win the argument. We had no intimacy in our marriage. Our marriage was terrible. Okay. Here's the opposite of that. I want to know how you feel because I want to please you. I may not understand it. I may not agree with it. But I'll respect it, and you'll never have to pay a price for saying it. If you think my breath stinks, if you think I'm not a good husband, if you think that I'm not meeting your needs, it may hurt, but I promise you will not lose your dignity in the process. And whenever you allow your spouse the right to complain, it builds trust. Over and over, they come back to you and say, honey, can I just tell you how it makes me feel when you don't take the trash out, when you don't help around, when you talk to me like that? And you say, well, I'm sorry. Have I been doing that? As opposed to saying, I haven't been doing that. You're just, you know, you're just petty and you're just jealous because I've, and you lash out at them and you teach them. A lot of people who come to marriage counseling, they tell us what the problem is. And we say, have you told your spouse that? And they say, I would never tell them that. I'd pay a huge price. They don't let me say stuff like that. The truth doesn't go away. You just bottle it up and it creates problems. So in conflict, I'm going to let you approach me and you're not going to pay a price for it. That creates trust. Confidentiality means two things. What I know about you stays in this marriage, and I will never share it with a family member or a friend, and I'll never use it against you in conflict. It shatters the trust of a relationship. No one knows more about you than your spouse. And if it becomes a weapon in wartime, it's worse than anything. If you tell your friends about it, and sometimes men and women both can do this, but what's between Karen and I is sacred. And if Karen knows, in other words, we're sitting there talking and we're having intimate conversation, and all of a sudden this trust develops and the Holy of Holies opens up, and I begin to tell you about my fears, about my hurts, about my temptations, about this and this, about my failures and all these kind of things. The Holy of Holies opens up, and now we're getting into self-revelation and intimate conversation, the two top levels of marriage. And all of a sudden, you take that information, and 3 weeks from now, you get mad at me, and you begin to talk about it among your family members and tell people, and you begin to use it against me and say, well, you know, you told me the other day you're afraid of clowns. You know, what kind of a manly man's, and I'm not afraid of clowns. And, you know, and all of a sudden, all that trust that was built in order for us to be able to open our hearts and talk, here we go. I'm not opening the doors to you again. It's too hurtful for you to take what I'm saying privately and share it somewhere else. In good times or in bad, I will absolutely be confidential about the details of our relationship. So there has to be trust, and that trust is developed over time by consistent behavior. And here's another way that trust is developed, by taking responsibility when you've blown it. See, no one's perfect, but when you won't take responsibility for behavior, it just means you're not responsible. How can I trust you? You do stuff wrong, but you won't take responsibility for it, as opposed to saying, I'm sorry, that was my fault. And I said that and it hurt you. For the first 5 years of our relationship, 3 years of dating and 2 years of marriage, I never one time said I was wrong. I was wrong all the time. But I was a selfish idiot and I was insecure. And I just thought the world would crumble if I said I was sorry. But that's not what crumbled. Our marriage crumbled. And Karen's trust for me crumbled. Karen had no trust for me because of the way that I was. And I couldn't blame her for it. And the night that our marriage was healed, I came to Karen and I said to her, I'm sorry. I've been a jerk. And I've devastated you with my mouth. And I've lived for work and golf, and I'm going to give golf up. I know that it's gotten in between our marriage. And that's what began the healing in our relationship. And that's what began the restoration of trust with her and me. It's when I took responsibility for my issues. And so we've got to do this in our relationship. and to have an atmosphere where I'm going to build trust with you. And if I've done something to violate trust, I'm going to take responsibility and repent and ask your forgiveness. Here's number four, essential in communication. It's an atmosphere of truth, and truth is critical. Now let me spend some time here, and let me say, Ephesians 4:15 says, speaking the truth in love, we may grow up in all things into him who is the head. Speaking the truth in love. The Bible says that Jesus was full of grace and truth, and this is a balance. Truth without grace is mean, and grace without truth is meaningless. You have to have both in order to grow in your marriage relationship. And here's just some truths about truth in marriage. Number one, relationships without conflict are not as satisfying as those that have conflict but resolve it. This is what research proves. If you never fight in your marriage, okay, because you never talk to each other about the things that really matter, your marriage satisfaction will drop. You don't need to fight as in hostile, warlike fights, but you have to tell the truth. And sometimes the truth is unpleasant. I mean, sometimes the truth means I feel negative right now. I'm hurt right now, and I need to talk about it. But if you avoid the truth, your marriage satisfaction will drop. The second thing is, where truth is spoken without love, it destroys the trust. You may have truth in your relationship, but it has to be seasoned with a spirit of grace. But here's the other thing that I want you to hear me say. The truth that we need to speak in marriage is not eternal biblical truth. It's my truth. When I'm telling Karen something, and this is the difference between complaining and criticizing. Criticizing is wrong, because criticizing points its finger and says, you know something, you said this to me yesterday and I know why you said it. You said it because you're evil. You're trying to get back at me for what I did the day before. You're so petty. Criticism is all about you. It's negative, and the judge and jury have met, and I'm giving you the verdict right now. I don't need to hear anything except a confession, and if you confess, I'll go light on you. It's just this horrible sense that I've been attacked, I've been painted with the wrong brush, there's nothing I can do about it. Complaining is completely different, because complaining has nothing to do with you, it has to do with me. You said this yesterday? I have no idea what you meant by it. You probably didn't mean anything by it at all, but it hurt my feelings. And I'm not saying that you meant to hurt my feelings, I'm telling you, it hurt my feelings. And I just want to talk about it. You don't feel threatened, you don't feel judged, because I didn't say anything about you. I said something about me. You said this. You probably didn't mean what I took by it. I just need to complain. Okay. It's not truth. It's my truth. I'm not telling you this is true. I'm simply telling you it's true for me. I'm going to tell you my truth. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to do that, because that's why I trust you. I'm going to tell you my truth and tell you how I feel, and we're going to talk about it. And all truth has to be preceded by grace. Research proves the first 3 minutes of a conversation dictate the conversation. A conversation never rises above the level of the first 3 minutes. So when I'm telling you the truth, here's the way I'm going to tell you the truth. I love you. I love you. We're a team. God put us together for a reason, and I'm committed to our relationship. And I want to tell you how I feel. And I've been frustrated. I feel like you're not helping around the house the way that you should, that you used to. I've told you, you know, how it makes me feel. And so I just want to talk about it. I know you're busy. I know you've got your own issues. I'm not accusing you of anything. I know you love me. I know you love our family. And I love you. But I want to talk about this. Because you started with affirmation, you pulled the conversation, grace and truth. By the way, when grace and truth or mercy and truth are mentioned in the Bible, mercy always comes first, or grace always comes first. It's not truth and grace, it's grace and truth. You precede truth with grace. Grace is the anesthesia that allows for truth to be spoken. And without grace, truth is harsh and cruel. And so I'm going to come to you and I'm going to say, I love you. You're the greatest. I'm so glad we're married and I'm committed to our marriage. As opposed to saying this, I'm sick of it and I've got my lawyer's number on speed dial. And depending on the outcome of this conversation, you may or may not be married. Now I'm just sick of it. And come in with my guns blazing, threatening and all that kind of stuff. That doesn't work. if I'm trying to be a good husband, how can I be a good husband unless I listen to what Karen says? And I'm not talking about trying to intimidate her where she makes me feel like a good husband even though she doesn't really believe it. I'm talking about an honest relationship. I heard a man say, I was at a men's retreat one time, and I heard a guy say something that really changed me. I mean, it impacted me till this day. And he said, every man needs to sit down with his wife over a cup of coffee and say to her, tell me what's wrong with me. And he said, if you can't do that, you're not a man. And I thought, ouch. Because I couldn't do it. When he said that, I thought, I wouldn't do that. She'd tell me. But that was what was wrong with our marriage. We didn't have truth in our relationship. Accept the absolute need for truth. Commit to being truthful. Allow your spouse the right to be truthful without paying a price for it. Even though it may be hard for you to process, it doesn't mean you have to lay down and play dead. It just means I'm going to let you be truthful. And here's number five. We'll close with this. It's a team spirit. It's honoring your spouse. I need you. And let me just close with this example. A couple of examples. The first is, money was our worst issue when Karen and I got married. We fought most about money. It was the worst thing. And we have different money languages. I'm an amiable. To me, money is love. Karen is an analytic. To her, money is security. Karen's very generous. But we just see money differently. To me, if you have money, you know, it's just, hey, you know, let's enjoy it. Let's go eat pizza. Let's take the kids on vacation. You know, it's great. To Karen, money's security. So let's save it. Let's save it. Let's pay off the bills. Let's save it like that. And so she called me a tightwad, or she called me a spendthrift, and I called her a tightwad because we judged each other. We weren't a team. We were at odds with each other, but we just had a different way of looking at money. Now today, the reason it's different is because we respect each other. And I say this jokingly, but our family is safer because of Karen, funner because of me. Together we have a fun, safe family. And Karen's more fun than me, everybody knows that. And Karen's a very generous person. But she is an analytic. We don't judge each other. We don't shame each other. We respect each other. And when we talk about money, Karen never comes to me and says, oh, Jimmy, because we're out of debt. We don't get into debt. We save money and we're careful. But she's the one who ingrained that in our relationship. She's also the one that ingrained giving in our relationship. She was the first one who started giving to the Lord. So I give that to Karen. But with me, the ethic that I brought into our relationship is, Karen, who cares how much you have in the bank if we're not able to live our lives? Let's enjoy our family. Let's enjoy our lives. Who knows if we have tomorrow? Let's enjoy today. And so Karen, you know, over the years, she loosened her grip, you know. And I'm serious about that, is she enjoys her life. And today, we have the same ethics. We enjoy our lives, but we're careful about our finances. You're a great team. Most of you have different money languages. You can fight about it. You can accuse each other. You can reject each other. Or you can sit there and be a team and say, you know, you're a great center. I'm a great quarterback. You're a great end. I'm a great halfback. Isn't it great how God put us together? You know, we're two halves of a whole. We're a team. And being a team means, I'm so thankful you're in my life. You're so different than me, and that's what I needed. There's the old saying, if both of you are the same, one of you is unnecessary. God puts you together. And when you honor each other, and when you respect your need for each other, in a conversation, an example of that is a lot of times Karen and I will sit down and I'll say, Karen, I really need your opinion on this. Or she'll come to me and say, Jimmy, I really need your input on this, because I just know there's some things I'm not good at. There's some things that she's fantastic at. When you become a team and you respect each other, your communication is going to be fantastic. A lot of communicating that goes on in marriage that has to go on. But whenever you get these things right and you respect these things, you're not going to be perfect when you walk out of here, but I can say this, you can be committed. And being committed means we're just not going to get lazy in this area. We're not going to develop bad habits, or if we have bad habits, we're not going to keep these bad habits. And my encouragement to you is, don't think about your spouse, think about yourself. And if there's something you need to apologize for or change, do that.
This concludes session 2. Please continue with Indestructible Love, the next teaching in this series.